questions open up the space in your mind for the answers to fill. But there's no space if you don't ask the question.
Welcome to episode 321 on the Hidden Why podcast. G'day, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Lee Munnelty, the Hidden Why guy, here to help you live your life with greater passion and purpose. And to do that, I believe we need to connect with our why. We need to use our why to direct our lives with greater purpose, taking more action towards living life with greater freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. That's what it's all about for me, and I want to help other people do the same. Guys, every week I interview inspiring guests, people that can share some value and teach us how to grow and how to live these lives that we so desire. And today's guest is Joslyn Gly. Joslyn Gly is the author of Unsubscribe. It is a modern guide to killing email anxiety, avoiding distraction, and getting real work done. She also has written another book called Manage Your Day to Day, Maximize Your Potential, and Make Your Mark. She's an incredible creative type, and she talks about, you know, really helping others bring their creative ideas through to execution so they can make it a reality. And I believe that's something that a lot of us struggle with. We have all these creative ideas and thoughts and things that we want to do, these visions about the future, etc., but we have trouble with the execution. And it's not because the formulas don't exist out there. There's plenty of things to teach us what to do and how to do it. It's about putting it into context and really getting grips with the concepts that others can teach us, and then using them as our own guides is fundamentally important. So we talk about that in this episode. We talk about productivity. We talk about, you know, being creative and what the benefits of creativity are and why they're fundamentally, you know, why self-expression is really important for the happiness of our lives. And importantly, we talk about effectiveness, you know, how to become more productive with our time and more purposeful with our time. So it's a really cool chat, very aligned with this show. I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy it, guys. Make sure you reach out to Joslyn. Thank her for coming on the show. If you do, love it. And pick up a copy of her book too. It promises to be a really cool read. I haven't read it yet, but I will be requesting a copy soon. So yeah, do reach out to her, guys. All the show notes are at thehiddenwhy.com, and you can pick up the books there, as I said, and find the links to Joslyn as well. Guys, if you love the show, you could do me a favor and just share it with your network. That'd be great. Facebook, Twitter, etc., etc. And you can always reach out to me at thehiddenwhy.com, leaving your comments in the fields there or using my email address and just saying, hey, you know, sending me a question, maybe some feedback for the show, or perhaps you just want to make a connection. That'd be cool too. So guys, that's it from me. Until the other end, enjoy this interview with Joslyn Gly. G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. My name's Lee Martinuzzi, and I'm excited. I'm pumped. I've got Joslyn Gly on the phone with me today, or on Skype, I should say. And she is obsessed about really helping others become more creative and more find more meaning in their day-to-day work. Is that correct, Joslyn?
Yes, it is. Glad to be here, Lee.
So, Joslyn, you've just written a book called Unsubscribe. I really want to talk to you about that book. But firstly, I've given you a quick introduction in the pre-interview segment, but I just want to ask you to just give us a snapshot of who you are, what you do, and what you're all about.
Yeah, well, right now I'm focused on, you know, as you said, I do a lot of nonfiction sort of business writing for creatives. So I have a recent book out, Unsubscribe, which is about how to kill email anxiety. And I also, you know, write regularly about sort of productivity, creativity, and careers. And then sort of in the process actually of, you know, launching a new podcast and, another conference, that I'm going to be rolling out in the coming year. And, prior to that, I ran this, brand called 99U, which was sort of the think tank of this creative company, Behance, which was a book series and a Webby award-winning website and a conference that happened every year in New York City at Lincoln Center that was all about sort of how to help creatives make their ideas happen. So really not about idea generation, but about idea execution. So right. For about the past, you know, 8 to 10 years, I've been focused pretty exclusively on, you know, interviewing creatives, designers, entrepreneurs, and looking at the research around what helps people be more creative and more productive.
Love it. So where has that arisen from? Like, have you always been a creative type and quite productive yourself, or is it you know, out of satisfying your own need that you're sort of helping others do the same now?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I've always been, you know, my entire sort of longer history has always been around editing and publishing. But at the same time, I've always had my own, you know, creative projects, whether it's writing short stories or writing screenplays or, you know, now writing more nonfiction type of stuff. And, you know, I think I initially became interested in sort of pursuing this through, you know, when I met Scott Belsky, who is the founder of Behance and originally started 99U. And, you know, I was actually working another full-time job at the time, or I was freelancing at the time, actually. And I was working on finishing a screenplay. And I was kind of like, oh, wow, this would actually be really great to kind of really dive into, you know, the study of idea execution. And maybe that will help me, you know, become better at executing on my own ideas. So it was kind of, you know, I think a curiosity on my own part with regard to my own creative projects, and then also just kind of always being interested in creating content and events that, you know, sort of inform people's curiosity and help them be more creative.
Mm, yeah, I like it. And I can certainly relate. I'm a bit of a creative type, and I often find my creativity becoming too consuming and not enough time given to the execution of my ideas. And I know a lot of the people that listen to the show can probably relate as well. So what is it about our creative sort of ambitions? I mean, where does that come from? Where does the creative ambition come from? Is that within all of us, or is it just for certain types, in your opinion?
Oh, you know, I completely don't agree with the idea of limiting creativity to certain people. You know, yeah. For me, I think creativity applies to any type of problem solving, you know, so that could be coding or engineering as much as, you know, writing a novel or creating a painting. You know, I think it's whatever that sort of, you know, almost ephemeral thing is, it sort of leads to those aha moments, you know, where you kind of really have that innovative idea and decide to take action on it.
So is it, because I'm just sort of writing on this at the moment, and I believe that, you know, creative expression is an essential element to our lives. Is being sort of creative something that brings greater happiness? Does it fulfill a purpose? Is it something to do with self-expression? What is it exactly?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, to me, I think it's a fundamental part of any type of self-expression, right? You know, I mean, I think humans are, you know, we are the sort of conscious thinking, goal setting, you know, animals. And I think, you know, being able to sort of have a vision of something and then actually bring it into reality is what, you know, really distinguishes us as a species in many ways. Yeah. So I think that's something, you know, that everyone needs. And I think one of the challenges is something that I think a lot about that I, you know, was looking at through a certain lens with my recent book Unsubscribe is that I think now we're confronted with so many different, you know, distractions and entertainments and consumerism opportunities that, you know, those are really drawing our attention away from focusing on our creative endeavors in some sense. And I think that is really creating a situation where we're very frequently busy, we're very frequently occupied, but, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of the month, at the end of the year, sometimes we feel like maybe we don't have so much meaning in our lives. And I think that's, you know, really the challenge that we're all kind of facing right now.
So we can find that by, you know, just using a bit of a creative flair in our lives and you know, expressing ourselves in that way, perhaps. So, I write to entertain, but I also try and write to educate and give some sort of value. I assume you do as well. And, you know, people consume that, but how do we stop, you know, appreciating being entertained by everyone else's expressions and start focusing more on expressing our own creative sort of self?
Well, I think that's a big question. I'll probably talk about that for a few days or a few weeks, but you know, I think it involves a lot of effort at this moment in time, you know. So if you think about something, you know, like social media, which is something, you know, that many people spend hours a day on right now, you know, which is maybe not something, which is something that feels very fun and sort of rewarding in the moment, but if you think about it in the long term, you know, that hour or two that you spent on Facebook today, you know, could have happened or not happened. And it's, yeah, it's like irrelevant to your life. You know, you certainly don't feel like you've achieved anything or you've created anything by kind of having that interaction. So I think on a certain level, it's about, we have to become a bit more conscious about how we're spending our time and a bit more conscious about actually like sort of actively creating downtime or just time where we're not doing anything at all, because it is so easy to be busy. And I think that we have to really work to be able to do that, you know? So whether it's like, okay, I'm not going to have, you know, and I'm not going to have the Facebook app on my phone. I'm not going to have Instagram app on my phone. I'm only going to look at it on desktop. So, you know, you actually create hurdles to doing that thing. Or, you know, I never sleep with my iPhone by my bed, you know, by a clock, wear a watch, do things like that. So you just literally reduce the interactions that you're having with your phone, you know, so that you don't have the opportunity to kind of get distracted and get sucked into something. So, you know, those are just little ideas, but I think that's really going to be the thing that gives people a sort of creative and career edge in the future, is really the ability to really effectively manage their attention.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because, I mean, we're in the age of information and technology is just unbelievable. How accessible it is and how global it is. It's hard to, you know, not get consumed up in the need for immediate sort of gratification out of, you know, the pleasures we seek online, etc. But really, it's, you know, going back to the question, it's sort of stems to me that it's about how what we consume drives us forward in the direction that we want to go in life, rather than just being, you know, based on the moment of what the entertainment might give us. So really looking at as more of a purpose-driven sort of behavior rather than just a case for giving us simple pleasures, et cetera.
Yeah, well, and I think there's a distinction to be made between sort of, you know, I guess, positive consumption that, you know, results in knowledge or learning versus consumption that sort of merely, you know, evanescent entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's and I think that in many ways, a lot of that entertainment replaces some of the deeper, you know, the deeper learning or deep. So, you know, instead of, you know, reading, you know, a nonfiction book that you might learn something from, or a novel from which you might learn something about humanity, you know, you sort of binge on Netflix. You know, we all do it. I do it myself. You know, and I think that, I think that is a satisfying in the moment, but sort of a poor substitute in the long run, because you're not maybe collecting some of that learning and I guess almost knowledge that actually will kind of fertilize your creative ideas, you know?
Yeah, I like that word. And look, I'm all for watching, you know, I like Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, and certainly I love to watch a good movie. But there is a balance to it, isn't it? It's not just about doing all that. It's about finding the time to seek that deeper learning and removing yourself from the environment so you can seek that deeper reflection as well, I think. That will really be conducive to taking you forward in the direction in life you want to go. So you obviously work and assist a lot of creative people taking their creative flair, taking their ideas and helping them execute it. How do you do that? Because, I mean, that's a big problem for me and many of the other people listening, is that we have surrounded by all this information and we keep reading this, keep reading that. We become overwhelmed, become confused. We lose the clarity of our ideas at times. We create more ideas, you know, it seems like it just goes around in circles and it's just a powerhouse. But then if there's no execution, we're just, we're not progressing really, are we?
Yeah. I mean, I think to your point, one of the things that's really missing today is, you know, when we get information or we get tips or we get this sort of productivity advice is context. Yeah. So you'll sort of get this. You know, you'll get this sort of piece of advice, and as you read, you're kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. But then, like, it doesn't really take into consideration all the other things that are happening in your life, all the other things that are happening in your workday. So it's hard to actually apply, even though when you sort of read it in passing, it kind of feels
makes sense.
You know, actionable. Mm. So I really try to, you know, in a way, with the new book, Unsubscribe, I was kind of like surprised myself that I wrote a book about email. But the reason that I did was because you know, essentially I kind of obsessed with this idea that, you know, we're all, you know, we're living in this age of distraction. And so it's very easy for us to be busy, but it's incredibly difficult for us to be focused, right? To be able to do that creative work that we're talking about. And when you look at what the kind of number one distractions for people are, email is just always public enemy number one. You know, most people spend at least 30% of their work week on email, if not a lot more. So
that's crazy, isn't it, really?
Right. And so to me, it's kind of like this, it's, and, you know, in a way I say that and you're kind of surprised, but you know that you spend a lot of time on email. We all do. And yet we kind of don't really never turn our attention to trying to like figure out how to fix that. So
yeah. Well, I came back, sorry, I'll just interrupt there, but yeah. I came back to Japan and it's been 10 years since I was here last. And mm-hmm. last I was here, it was the first time I ever had a phone, and the phone that I got then was pretty much a phone, you know, it was just for making calls and receiving messages. Mm-hmm. And it was just interesting to reflect on how different life is now with all this technology at my fingertips compared to how it was then. And it really made me sort of open my mind to how reliant we seem to become to the technology and how owning it becomes of us. Yet without any real major need, because I lived a very content life previously 10 years ago.
Right. So, yeah, right. Yeah. And now you want all these different things maybe that you didn't previously want become addicted to them. Right. But you raise an interesting point, because I think that we kind of do have to sort of constantly reassess our relationship to the technologies that we're using, because they are changing so fast. And an interesting example of that with email specifically is that, you know, many of us are still kind of obsessed with this idea of inbox zero, right? But that idea, you know, that was a phrase that was coined by this, you know, then sort of productivity guru Merlin Mann. Okay. And it was in 2007. It was in March of 2007.
Wow.
What happened in June of 2007 was the launch of the iPhone. So prior, like when he was sort of advocating for inbox zero, which was never about just sort of blindly getting to zero, it was more about trying to be more effective with your time so you could focus on the important things. But setting that aside, even the very idea was based on a world in which we like only checked email at our desktops.
Yep.
Right. And then we got the iPhone, and then all of a sudden, you know, there were no boundaries. Your email could follow you anywhere. And not to mention, you know, with the rise of smartphones, you know, everyone starts to be able to email, right? Just globally, like there's more and more and more email, and it's easier to find everyone's email address. So we kind of have this like unlimited, you know, anyone who can find you on the internet has access to your inbox, you know, and then your inbox can follow you everywhere.
Yeah.
But we sort of like never reassess the idea of inbox zero or our relationship to email, you know, and that was in 2007. So I think that, you know, whether you're talking about email or anything else, you have to sort of, you know, I'm not saying in a daily way, but, you know, maybe in an annual way, you know, just try to take a step back and reassess that relationship to the technology and think about, you know, is the way that you've been using it really serving you? And if it's not, you know, what do you need to tweak?
How can you improve it? Well, I think it is maybe a daily thing to be mindful of, because unless you've got full control of it, and that will take time, then you need to have that mindfulness there every day, every moment, like even you know, to the point where when you're just about to open your phone to check your emails, you just go, hey, hang on a sec, do I really need to do this now? Until you've got it under control, then yeah, maybe you can just sort of reflect every few months. But I sort of had gone through this stage where I became very sort of used to not checking emails and social media, etc. And then it sort of just flowed back in and it got hold of me again. And just recently, I've just committed to doing it once a day. You know, that's checking emails. And it's just amazing how different it makes me feel, like not having to need. It's like an addiction. It really is. It's a need to go to the phone. And if you can't get there, you sort of feel frustrated or anxious. But once you sort of get over that initial sort of urge, it becomes quite freeing and liberating.
Yeah. I mean, it is an addiction. And there's also research that shows that the more frequently you check your email, the more stressed out you feel. So, you know, there's it's negative on any number of levels to be kind of obsessively checking your email. So I think you're right. I mean, a lot of what I've been thinking about lately is really that, you know, I think it's always been true, but even more so now, that, you know, productivity is really about what you don't do, less so than it is about what you do choose to do. Because I think, and I say it that way because I think so many of us have this feeling that if we're doing something, we're being productive. But because there's so many ways in which you can sort of, you know, just be doing busy work these days or sort of, you know, busily checking your social media feed, I think that, you know, we have to sort of shift our focus really to, you know, what you want to cut away, you know, what you don't want to focus on.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about that because you talk about, you know, clearing the clutter, I guess. I mean, that's how I refer to it as well, just clearing the clutter. And that can be from my daily tasks list to the stuff in my environment, you know, the things that own me and the things that, you know, clutter my desk, etc. As I look around my desk and see way too much clutter right now. But you talk about sort of that decluttering, don't you? Is that the word you use? I don't know. Distraction.
Well, decluttering is basically removing distraction. It's certainly a good word for that. I mean, I think the challenge is that you have to regularly sort of pull yourself out of that, you know, kind of zoomed in everyday state where your computer, your phone is 12 inches in front of your face and that's what you're focused on. And, you know, every 3 to 6 months, make sure you're really thinking about the big picture. You know, I have a practice where I just, you know, write down kind of my key project goals, you know, and make sure that they're limited. So maybe there's 3 or 4 projects for the next 6 months that I want to focus on. You know, what am I trying to achieve? A short statement about that. And then, you know, a short list of action steps that I need to take to get there. Hmm. And then that goes up on my wall next to my desk, kind of in my line of sight. And then that becomes the thing that sort of dictates, you know, how I prioritize everything that comes in and also how I decide what goes on my daily to-do list, you know, which emails I decide to respond to, which tasks I decide to focus on, you know, today, this week. And I think a lot of us tend to do the daily to-do list, but we frequently don't kind of zoom out to like that big picture level. Mm. And I think you need to do that. And that's kind of what gives you that clarity in order to say, oh, you know what? Like that actually doesn't, you know, this email doesn't relate to my larger goals. Like, you know, this request, you know, that I'm getting from my boss, I need to put it in context for him or her. So they understand that if I take on that project, you know, I won't be able to work, you know, spend 100% of my time on this project, you know, so you always kind of have that context. And I think that the context is really what gets lost in this kind of fire hose of information that we get these days.
Yeah, it's so true. And the hardest thing is because we're so, you know, unique and we're all individual and our lives are also, you know, vast and different. What works for me won't work for you necessarily. So it's easy to read the information and go, yeah, that makes sense. But then the actual act of doing it and incorporating it into our lives is quite difficult. And sometimes we just need that support and that help from others to help us understand how to incorporate. I mean, I'm assuming that's sort of what you do with your work in a sense as well. But, you know, that's certainly something that I've felt missing a lot is just the ability to be able to incorporate that into my life rather than just use it as information and then not do anything with it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And that's why I'm kind of much more interested in, you know, the psychology behind what makes us creative, what makes us productive, or what makes us not creative or not productive. And thinking about, like, what are the kind of core, you know, concepts that you need to understand in order to be productive, in order to get your most meaningful work done. Yeah. And I'm a lot less interested in systems because I think that, you know, for something to be, as you say, everyone's life, everyone's needs are very different. So it's much more powerful to share a concept with someone and have them really understand like how that concept functions and how that concept works so that you can then actually apply it to your life rather than, you know, reading, you know, for me, like a book, like, you know, kind of Getting Things Done doesn't work for me because I don't like want someone to tell me what to do. And I think creative people don't generally want someone to tell them what to do. But they do need to have an understanding of what are the kind of core concepts that they need to understand in order to, you know, manage their attention, manage their time, and then they can apply them in whatever way they want.
Yeah, I really like that. It's about the concept, not the formula necessarily to help us progress. And I'm the same. Like I read those books where it says, hey, now write down, you know, 5 things about this and then do this. And I'm just like, I couldn't be screwed with it. I'll just, I take what you've sort of said and use it in my own way best I can. But I think that's what makes the learning really much more paramount, is when we actually take those concepts on board and rather than use the formulas given, actually go out and seek the formula that best suits our life. So I think that's when I really have the growing experience. There's a formula. Oh, he says wake up at 5 o'clock, so I'm just going to start doing that. And then I have this battle of trying to, you know, do that. And this is an example. A battle of trying to do that every day that actually just doesn't fit me. And it's therefore limiting to my growth rather than conducive to it.
Yeah, well, then you probably find your own approach, which then you feel sort of much more loyal to, you know, when you kind of customize and tailor something to the way that you work, you know, as opposed to just taking, you know, sort of blindly taking on someone else's idea.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's for me as well, and perhaps this is the same for you, but for going through, you know, and just trying these different formulas and ideas that people have of how to, you know, become more productive, for example. In that experience itself, you do have that learning and you get to see what works and what doesn't work for you. Whereas if you don't actually give things a go, you're still just going to remain there in the learning and in the information rather than, you know, experiencing it and finding the true learning.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Cool. going to some practical advice, or some bigger concepts, how do we help people manage their day-to-day more truly, rather than, you know, just being get swept away by the urgent demands that seem to pop up all day in a knack of getting busy? Like, how can we just sort of draw ourselves out and remain focused on the bigger things?
It was funny, as we were talking, I was like, okay, this is very conceptual. Like, I feel like I want to actually talk about things that people can do, you know? So, I mean, I guess a couple of concepts that I use pretty regularly, you know, if you're thinking about kind of managing your time, managing your energy, managing your attention, I guess there's two that work in concert that I think a lot about, which are, you know, the first one is sort of the, you know, research behind Erik Erikson's research behind the sort of science of high performers, you know, which you're probably familiar with, which is the idea that he did come up with that, but actually a different aspect of his research where he talks about that, you know, high performers typically only work in 90 to 120 minute sprints. And then they typically take a break of, you know, half an hour to an hour and then kind of return to another sprint. And that, you know, most people can really only do 3 or maybe 4 of those sprints in a given day. You know, so just thinking about a concept like that, like, okay, how do I apply that to my day to day? Because I think some of us tend to, try and do like a 4-hour sprint or something like that. You know, sometimes when you really get into that creative zone, but you sort of start to have diminishing returns. So, you know, being aware of concepts like that, like how you can kind of optimally manage your energy. And then kind of on top of that, you know, thinking about the idea of circadian rhythms. You know, the idea that we all have our own kind of biorhythms and natural energy peaks and natural energy dips throughout the day. And so it's really important to kind of align your most meaningful work, your most creative work with those rhythms. And everyone's a little bit different, but, you know, for most people, the sort of peak time of mental focus and energy is from about 9 to 11 in the morning, or about 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., depending if you're a little bit more of a night owl. You know, and then everyone experiences an energy dip after lunch, you know, from about like 2 to 4 p.m. So if you think about those two concepts and you think about the way that most of us manage our time, what a lot of us do is we come in the morning, we open our email, we do like an hour or two on email. You know, some requests come in the email, and then, you know, you get distracted by those requests, and maybe you do some other stuff to, you know, to sort of respond to them. And then, you know, it's around about like 2 p.m., 3 p.m., you know, then you have some time to actually focus on the work that matters to you. But of course, like if you think about the circadian rhythms, that's the exact opposite of what you want to do. You know, you want to do that high value work in the morning, and you want to do some of that like less mentally demanding, you know, maybe rote work in the afternoon. So, you know, those are just sort of two concepts that I think about a lot, but that most of us don't actually, kind of apply in our daily workday.
Yeah, it's so important, and I used to be that way where I'd you know, because I just felt getting all those little things out of the way for me, it just sort of helped me have a clean slate so I could focus on what was important.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I sort of made sense of it, but it wasn't often helping me get, you know, the most done in my days. Whereas now I wake up and I know my biggest focus right now is writing a book, for example. So I have one goal every day to write, you know, a chapter or so many words or whatever it might be. And as long as I get that done, nothing else takes over my time. And it's a constant awareness, but so it's throughout the day where I have to sort of, like you said before, zoom out and go, hang on, well, what's most important here? Is it really, you know, checking my LinkedIn connections, or is it actually doing the writing? So it's really that constant, you know, awareness around what you're doing and then honing back in. And I love the idea of working in chunks and blocks as well. That certainly has worked wonders for me. So I like those concepts. Are there any other concepts or sort of productivity lessons that seem to be consistent?
Oh, I mean, there's so many, but I think in particular, you know, if we were to talk about email, which is something obviously I was kind of thinking a lot about recently. If you look at the research around the way that people typically check their email, you know, there's kind of two styles. Mm-hmm. One is, you know, people are very reactive, you know, and it's very notification driven. And so they're constantly, you know, multitasking with email and other tasks throughout the day. And it's really just driven by, you know, responding to those notifications. And then there's a second type of person who is a batcher. And those are people who are kind of taking, you know, setting aside a limited window of time, you know, maybe two or three times a day, let's say 30 minutes, to check their email and focus 100% of their attention on their email. And then, you know, when they're outside of those blocks, then focusing their energy 100% on other tasks. And what the research has shown is that people who check their email in batches are more productive, they're less stressed, and they're happier. Mm. So I think that's something that people find very difficult to do. But I think that it's, you know, obviously if you kind of take that research on board, it's extremely powerful if you are able to make that shift.
Mm.
And I think a lot of times, you know, you just said you kind of made a shift to just checking your email once a day, which might be, you know, a little too aggressive for some people. But if you can even, you know, find the time to do, you know, that kind of 60 or like 90 minute sprint of meaningful work in the morning before you first open your email and kind of open that Pandora's, you know, I think even that is a major shift. And I think that, you know, I think in a sense, you know, we kind of train people in we help set their expectations, right? We get sort of annoyed that people, you know, are so demanding or expect us to respond so quickly. But in many ways, we are often setting those expectations ourselves through our behavior. So I think oftentimes, you know, you can make that shift to batch checking if you want to. You just kind of have to be cognizant that it's going to take a little bit of time to kind of retrain people's expectations.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just try and give it a go and see how it works. But
usually the world won't end.
I think it's not as well just, you know, going to the inbox zero, which makes me feel very pleased when I get there. But, you know, if you check things in the morning, not only it's the distraction of getting into the emails and responding to requests, et cetera, but even if you check a message that sort of rubs you the wrong way or starts you thinking, it takes your train of thought off you know, where it should be. And the morning, as mm-hmm. you said, like that morning time for me, it's when I'm just clear. There's nothing else sort of cluttering my mind other than my own self-creative sort of thoughts. And that's what's going to get the work done more brilliantly and wonderfully for me personally. And if I check an email or check social media and there's a little message or someone on a beach location, it just starts changing my thought processes and takes me off the tangent. You know, it's not conducive to quality work. So I think, you know, I used to find it in real estate when I'd check emails first thing in the morning before anything else. I'd get out of bed and pretty much check emails. And then mm-hmm. there'd be, you know, a client complain. There'd be some angry buyer, you know, whatever it might be. And then it'd just sort of raise your emotions in a negative way and not be conducive to making a positive sort of day.
It changes the whole quality of your breakfast or something when you really didn't even need to look at it in the first place, right?
Put it off. I've like seriously, since I've done that once a day thing, like now Whilst I still want to check it, if I get to the end of the day and I'm still working on another project, I just say, well, you know, it's not the end of the world. And you're right, like nothing ends, like it's going to be there tomorrow. And there's likelihood of someone having an amazing urgent request by email is very rare. Like they'd call you or contact you by other means if it was that urgent.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's little things you can do, you know, like, you know, if you use an iPhone, you can set VIP notifications for the people who are really important. So, you know, turn off all your other notifications and that'll, you know, send you a text notification if you get an email, you know, from someone who really requires urgent response. And that kind of frees you up to otherwise ignore it, or just setting little rules for yourself. You know, one that I have for myself is that I don't you know, I will not feel the need to respond to anyone who is a stranger, you know, within the same day. You know, like I'm not going to treat emails from strangers as urgent. And I think, you know, even if you just apply that one little rule, for most of us, that could cut down on, you know, 50% of the emails that you might treat as urgent or more, you know? So, you know, you don't have to do something necessarily always so drastic, but if you just kind of adopt a few little rules of thumb, I think it can make a big difference.
Well, there's always exceptions, isn't there? I mean, if you're waiting on an email from someone to help you do that next project, then you know, you need to check your emails, obviously, to see if that's there. So
I find it relieves a lot of anxiety to do the VIP notifications. And for me, I actually change them regularly, you know, so it's like, okay, when I'm talking to my agent about, you know, securing a book deal, like she's a VIP. And then once we've done that, then, you know, she's no longer a VIP, you know, so you kind of rotate it a bit based on what's important. And then you can just feel like, oh, you know, I'm not going to be missing out on anything if I don't look at my inbox. And then you can feel relaxed about it.
Cool stuff, Joslyn. I really appreciate it. And lots of value and lots of good insight. I know we could talk for days on productivity by the sounds of it. So, let's jump into some quick round questions. I know we're going to wrap up the show soon. So feel free to answer them as long as you wish, but if you can stick to a sentence or so, that'd be great. First question is, do you have any other routines or rituals that you believe contribute to your success? Anything that you haven't mentioned so far?
You know, I think the very simple act of making tomorrow's to-do list the night before so that you can kind of wake up, you know, very clear about your priorities and extremely directed is really powerful and small change.
Okay. How do you do that? Like, what's your technique? Because me, I'm very much visual in the head, sort of making my to-do list. I sort of have to look at my calendar and know what's going on so I can sort of then just visualize it the night before. But what do you do?
I look at my calendar because I do think that's the hidden to-do list that we often don't acknowledge. So I actually write everything that's on my calendar on my to-do list because those are things that I'm doing as well. And then I kind of look at, you know, I said that I have that goals list on the wall. So I kind of look at the goals list, you know, and do sort of a mental scan and then, you know, decide what I want to focus on based on those things. But I do think, adding in everything on your calendar is really important because we tend to just pretend like those things aren't happening sometimes. And so you'll plan, you know, maybe 8 hours a day of work, you know, when maybe you'll really only have 4 hours free. So taking both those things to account.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Listen more.
Okay. What, in what way, like what sort of aspects do you feel you weren't listening enough?
I'm just a very, chatty person who really likes to, you know, who really likes to talk about ideas and I like to share my ideas. And I think as I've gotten older, I've become much better at listening. I think there's always room for, improvement. But I think, you know, sometimes you're not really listening more, just kind of, it opens up an interest, a space for interesting things to happen that can't happen if you're always kind of filling it up with conversation.
Yeah, I like it. And what is your meaning of success?
For me, I think it's autonomy, by which I mean really just the sort of freedom to, you know, execute my creative vision to the fullest for whatever, you know, the project at hand might be.
Yeah, cool. And we've sort of talked about productivity. Have you got any other bits of, like another piece of productivity advice that you'd like to share?
I think I sort of touched on this before, but really the idea of making a stop doing list. Not something that you do on a daily basis, but maybe something you do every 3 to 6 months. And just make a list of the things that you want to stop doing. And it's incredibly powerful.
Yep. Love it. Cool. And anyone looking to make change in their life right now, any advice that you'd give them?
For me, I think it's always thinking about before the answers, you really have to ask the right questions. So, you know, to sort of begin pursuing that change just by asking yourself a lot of questions until you finally, you know, start to see a little bit of light around the answers. But there's a Clayton Christensen quote that I really like that is something to the effect of questions open up the space in your mind for the answers to fill. But there's no space if you don't ask the question.
Who is that by?
Clayton Christensen, who writes a lot about innovation. It's actually in this interview, it's actually a sort of quote from Jason Fried, the guy who founded Basecamp, and he was chatting with Clayton Christensen and then wrote this blog post about that particular statement.
Oh, cool. I like it. Do you, actually, where are we going? There we are. Okay. Do you have a favorite food?
Anything salty.
Okay. Any particular favorites there, like jerky or salty plums?
pretzels, probably.
Okay. Yeah, I like a good pretzel. What's your favorite leisure activity?
Rock climbing.
Cool. And do you have a favorite book that you'd like to recommend?
Well, it's, I don't know how germane it'll be for your listeners, but Middlemarch is my favorite book.
Middlemarch.
Yeah, it's like classic George Eliot novel. Extremely rich and long and very...
Okay, I'll stick it in the show notes, guys, so check that out at thehiddenwhy.com. And do you have a favorite quote? You've just mentioned one, but do you have another one you'd like to put up?
There's one I really like from this guy, James Richardson, who wrote this book called Vectors, which is, nothing important comes with instructions. Even though it would be nice if it did.
No, I think that's what makes the important things important, is because they don't have instructions. You have to search out. I think that's what makes life really.
Yeah, really, and fun, important. Right? And surprise. And
search out those answers and take your journey wherever you want it to take you. Cool. I like it. What do you believe we will have a why?
I think... that we all have the ability to question. You know, if you think about a child, they're always like, why this, why that, why? You know, and I think that we lose that sometimes as we get older. Mm. But the only way to find your why is really to, you know, keep asking in that same way that a four-year-old does.
Yep. Like that. Good answer. And what do you believe? Oh, what is your meaning of living life with passion and purpose?
Never losing your curiosity. I think if you have that, there's always something interesting to do.
Yeah. Cool. Love it. So Jocelyn, how can people best reach out to you and find more information about you? I'll stick your book in the show notes as well. So guys, you can pick that up at thehiddenwhy.com, but how can they find you, Jocelyn?
They can find me at jkglei.com. They can find a lot of blog posts about productivity and creativity, and as well my new book Unsubscribe.
I love that image. I'm just looking at your website now. There's an image of some dude covered in like a black plastic or tar.
Yeah,
crazy.
That's
crazy. I like it.
Yeah, that was supposed to embody the feeling that reading the news gives you these days.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Very creative. So Nate, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. I've had a lot of fun.
Yes, fun to chat with you, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Guys, make sure you go to hiddenwhy.com. Check out all the show notes there. The links will be there to Jocelyn's website as well as her book, so you can pick up a copy through the links provided to help support the show. And, if you have any questions, make sure you reach out to us, either of us, at our websites. Guys, until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. Another great show. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got some value from it. I would love to hear from you, and I encourage you to jump onto thehiddenwhy.com. Subscribe to our newsletter. Subscribe to this podcast so you can keep up to date with all that's happening in the Hidden Wide world. And leave me your comments and thoughts on this show or any of the other shows that you're listening to and what you're loving. If you could do me a favor too, it'd be great if you could share it with your network, with your friends, your colleagues, other people that you might think might benefit from this show or any of the other ones you're listening to. Guys, it's all about living life to the fullest and living the life that you desire here at The Hidden Why. I'd love to connect with you. Reach out to me at thehiddenwhy.com. And guys, you know what to do. You need to go out there and breathe more passion into every moment. And you need to do everything with greater purpose. And in doing so, discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Martinuzzi, signing out.